Hi, this is Kashish. Welcome to a new episode of Business Odyssey.
Hello, we are Lakshmi and Laura, partners in the journey of building community of practice. Thank you for joining us, where we focus on exploring the human-centric approach while we consider all the variables that affect it, from the learning and development, performance, change processes, leadership and coaching, diversity and inclusion, and other key topics as well. Today, we are joined by Zoe Poulton, founder, consultant, and people focused. We talked about how leadership and high performance teams are connected, their impact on personal and professional life, and how they connect with culture, diversity, communication, and more. Happy learning.
Let's go to the interview now.
Oh, hello, Zoe. Hello, Lakshmi. Happy to have both of you here. It's an interesting topic that we are going to have today in our episode. But first, Zoe, if you want to introduce yourself.
Of course. Hi, both. Hi, Laura. Hi, Lakshmi. Really, really pleased to be here today. So my name is Zoe Poulton. I spent a long time in the Royal Air Force and the military, and I came out a few years ago now, two or three years ago, to go into consulting. Absolutely love consulting around most people topics, HR, diversity and inclusion. But my real big passion is leadership studies and how leaders and teams work together to create those high performing teams. So I left employment in April and opened my own leadership consultancy, Glass Ripple Consulting. And I do a lot of work with different companies, leadership and teams, just to make sure they are working together and sort of pushing towards those objectives, while also making sure that both the leaders and the teams are thriving as well.
Great. Good to know that, all that stuff. Thank you so much, Zoe. We have we are a big topic today, that is leadership. So I cannot, I'm interested first to get a common understanding between the three of us and the audience about what leadership is all about. If you want to tackle that first, that would be great.
So leadership, what is leadership? Now, there are so many different theories about different styles of leadership, situational, yeah, transactional, transformational, absolutely loads. So I won't go into them at too much depth. For me, leadership is very, it's different for each person. Each person will have their own specific leadership style, and it will be very different depending on the team as well. So the leader will understand their team, or should understand their team, and understand actually what type of leadership do they need. Do they need possibly a, as we have in the military, a very command style of being told in war zones, do this, do that, you need to be here, you need to be doing this? Or actually, is it more of a, I call it a democratic leadership, where you want that diversity of thought within the team, and you're at, you know, peacetime, maybe not in a war zone, but at peacetime, where you're sat with a cup of tea, chatting about ideas, and you really want to make sure the team is bringing those ideas to the fore. So that might be a bit more of a democratic sort of transformational leadership. You want to inspire people. So leadership for me is very different depending on who you ask and which area you're in, as long as it suits the team and the company, and all works cohesively together.
Great. That's a good, that's a good definition. And with that came another question right now, a different question right now. I will change that question. From your experience and from your perspective, actually, how do you are able to connect the leadership, the culture as well, and the people. And when I'm saying people, I'm referring to the different level that we can find in an organization. Individual teams, and then you have the squads and so on. But mainly the question is, how do you connect the leadership with the culture and with the people?
So you might see me looking down. I have written a couple of notes, just from some theory and some research. I want to make sure I've got the dates right on them. So if you see me looking down, that's what I'm quickly looking at.
It's okay.
So I think with that question, how do we connect it all? How do we connect leadership with the culture and the people as well? For me, it's quite interesting you say culture, because I think when we look at what leadership is, it's important to understand what culture means. For me and from the research I've done, it's very much an umbrella term. So it covers your social behaviours, your institutions, your customs, your beliefs, your habits. And that's the intangible aspects within a group's social life. So it's the feel of an organisation. And I think the easiest way to explain that is, have you ever applied for a job? And you thought, wow, this sounds amazing. This company does all the stuff I want to be involved in. Looks amazing. Apply for the job, get the job, start the job. And then suddenly it's just not quite the same. And it's that feel. It's the difference between what is said outwardly and then what those actual social behaviors are once you're inside the culture. So that's when you sometimes see that you get a lot of organizations will recruit for a job, and when people get in, they go, oh, it's not quite what you said. And that is that feel. It's the feel of the business. So if we build on that, thinking of that culture being those social behaviors, the beliefs and habits, thinking about leaders and how they play that pivotal part as the cornerstone of culture. You'll quite often hear me in my LinkedIn posts, in my conversations with everyone, talking about leaders as the architects of culture. Mm-hmm. So they create and design the foundations of the culture of that business. And when I say cornerstone and architects, I mean, you know, it's the particular thing that things that people are depend on, that dependents are based on. Mm-hmm. So when I was looking at, you know, areas to talk about within this podcast episode, and how leadership and culture and teams all connect, I really wanted to talk a lot about high performing culture. A lot of organizations strive to have a high performing culture, but quite often we're not sure actually, what does that mean? How do I get to that? What different areas can I pull in to make that high performance? It's a bit of a minefield, but we'll try and unpick a little bit of it. So I want to talk to you about how leaders can facilitate the creation of these high performing teams and cultures. And I say facilitate on purpose. The role of a leader, we've talked about what leadership is. The role of a leader, in my humble opinion, is to really create that environment where the teams can thrive. And I mean every single member of the team. So by thrive, I mean professionally, working towards those professional business collective goals. But I also mean personally. And when people personally thrive, which is very much linked to the EVP of a company, so the employee value proposition, but when they thrive, it has those knock-on business benefits as well. So you'll have more employee engagement, you'll have better retention and increased recruitment, quite often through word of mouth, because people are saying, this is amazing, I love working here, come and work with us. You'll have more discretionary efforts, so people going above and beyond past what their remit of the role is. And you'll also get better well-being and job satisfaction, which is so important, especially nowadays as we're coming, you know, we've had a really hard couple of years with COVID, and we're starting to go mm-hmm. into that hybrid working and trying to make sure people are able to thrive in that environment. So if we think about, yeah, so what is the environment that becomes part of the culture, and how can a leader facilitate its creation? And I'm going to put a bit of a disclaimer in here. There is no one size fits all. There are no secrets about to be displayed here. I'm just going to give some suggestions and practical tips. And all I'd say is put some in place, see what happens, adjust them and see what works for the team. One thing that I found in my time in the military and time working in consultancy has been communication with the team on what works best for them. quite often we'll see leaders try things over and over again, and they'll say to me, Zoe, I don't know why it's working. And I'll say, neither do I. What does your team say? And they'll go, oh, I don't know. Like, well, ask your team. Because you're, as a leader, I very much sit with servant leadership. So you're there to serve your team, you know, to help them develop, to help them explore ideas. So if you don't know what they're thinking and if something's working for them, then as a leader, you're not, for me, you're not doing your job. So if it's okay with you, Laura, I'll start with communication, and we'll mm-hmm. talk a little bit about communication and then into a bit of psychological safety as well.
Yes.
So mm-hmm. I have a question for you both. Have a okay. think of this scenario for me. Imagine you have an idea. Okay. So you've been off at the weekend. You've got this amazing idea for something at work and you're so excited. Going to work on a Monday morning and you tell one of your team. And they roll their eyes at you. I mean, they could have just had a bad weekend, but they go, ugh, yeah, I don't like that idea. No good. Just, yeah. So my question is, how do you feel at that moment when that colleague has rolled their eyes and said, ah, no, not a good idea? And we must have all had it happen. How do you feel?
I mean, it's a tough question, a tough situation as well. Lakshmi, if you want to go first, please.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, you know, for me, it again even depends upon the individual and how much I know that individual, right? I mean, if I have a very good understanding of you know, like if the syncing up happens, right, with this person, even if the person is rolling the eyes and all of that, you know, I wouldn't take it in a not so good way, right? I mean, that threat or, you know, whatever comes in right to your mind and all that will not happen, hopefully. So I think, you know, the context, the situation, and even the other person, you know, that matters a lot, at least yeah, for me.
You are a better person than me, Lakshmi. That's all I can say. Okay, so you've had this and you've had this person roll your eyes and you've thought, oh, okay, they may have had a bad weekend. I usually get on really well with this person, but I'm feeling a little bit deflated because I had this idea, it's amazing, but they don't like it. On a scale of a 10, how likely are you to share that idea with other people in your group now that someone who you respect and who you've worked with, now that they've said, nah, that's not a good one?
Even before doing that, at least my perspective, even before doing that, I would like to have that conversation in terms of what's going on in your mind. Why that no? You know, tell more, because then I really need to understand, you know, everything. And then, you know, try to populate this kind of a thing with others, right? I mean, I only just because of one person, I just don't want to go ahead and make a decision, you know? So yeah, for me, again, anything and everything, it boils down to this, you know, yeah. The dynamics, basically. So yeah.
That is a very balanced way of looking at it. I like that. Laura, what about you? So someone's rolled their eyes at you and gone, no, that idea won't work. Just ignore it. You know, how would you feel?
I think, I mean, it's, it is, for me, I see it, it's the same in that case, I believe. Mm-hmm. The kind of relationship and understanding that we have with the other person. If it's someone that is like close to me in the meaning of personal and professional, and he or she is saying no, and without any explanation, I will ask for that. Just to understand the process, how is the thought process actually. And after that, not make a decision based on that, but maybe trying with somebody else. But first, I will say my answer to that will be relative based on the kind of relationship I have built with that person.
Okay.
And to understand the thought process regarding the answer.
Brilliant. Okay. So what I would like you to do is remember that answer. You both pretty much said it's about the relationship you have with that person, how well you know them, the dynamics between the two of you and the team. So keep that in your mind as we move through this talk, because we'll come back to that in a minute. Second scenario. So we're talking about communication. So this one you've had, you know, eyes roll. I know how it'd make me feel. I'd feel a bit deflated and think, oh, okay, I thought that was a great idea, but feel a little bit deflated. Like you both, I would share the team as well, because that is who I am and I want to have those opinions. But some people wouldn't. Some people would feel deflated, think their idea was no good, and actually not share that idea with anyone because they think, well, the person I respect has said no, so I'm going to take on board what they've said and I'm going to keep it to myself. Scenario two, same situation, excited idea, coming back on a Monday morning. But this time your colleague says to you, I'm not sure it could work, but hey, try it with the group. Yeah, encourages you to actually speak to the group and start talking and brainstorming. How would you feel if they said it like that to you? Same message, but put you in a different way. How would it make you feel? I'll ask a different question. Would you prefer the first way or the second way? So the first way is a rolling your eyes, a very negative feedback of, no, your idea is not good, ignore it. Or a, I'm not sure about this, but more positively, share it with the group and that encouragement to actually bring that to the group. Which way would you prefer them to react to you?
Okay, if we took from different variables, I will say that the second one could be, but at the same time could not be. It depends on the accountability that that person has, because you can have more than one scenario. One is if the answer is not within the team, so the decision of not proceeding with that idea is a team decision, rather a leadership decision.
Yeah.
And so there is no responsibility from this person that you respect a lot. And from the other side, it's a straightforward negative feedback that I still don't know. I'm still not sure it's the right thing to do.
Okay. Interesting. Lakshmi, any more from you before I move on to the difference between these and communications?
No, I agree with Laura on the part that, you know, if given a choice, the second one is always fair enough. But again, yeah.
Always, and that's it. Leadership is always situational. It's always understanding your team and understanding actually how do your team want to be spoken to. There's a famous, I think, Richard Branson quote, which says, I'm paraphrasing, but treat others how you would like to be treated. Mm-hmm. And I always say, no, actually, treat others how they would like to be treated. Understand that your team may want something different from you to what you would want from people. So it's that kind of discussion, conversation. So the difference between those two scenarios is not how your colleague felt about your idea. In both scenarios, your colleague didn't agree with your idea and didn't like it. However, it's how they reacted to you. So the response to you were both very different responses. And that's a choice in itself. They chose how to respond to you. And we could link that to all sorts of things, growth mindset and all sorts, but it's how they communicated that with you. And then if we talked about the latter and they said, yeah, I'm not sure, but communicate that with the group and see what they think, because they'll have different perspectives. So then you, by sharing your idea with the wider group, you can tap into that diversity of thought. So they're different perspectives, they're different experiences. You can brainstorm, you can collaborate, you probably can't see, I've got a whiteboard, you can write all over a whiteboard. And that really breaks down silos and leads to innovation. And that all stemmed from a single conversation you had on a Monday morning with your colleague. So you see, with sometimes with leadership and creating that environment for people to thrive, it can be one of the things we talked about was communication. So that is the, mm-hmm. I say the simple art, of course, it's never simple, but that simple art of communicating and helping people to bring their ideas to the fore. So what I thought I'd do, if it's good with you, is just lead on to psychological safety and talk a little bit about psychological safety and how it can lead to that high performing team. Mm-hmm. So there has been absolutely tons of research on psychological safety because it's an umbrella term for a lot that comes under it. But the main researcher is a doctor called Amy Edmondson. She's done a lot of research with her team, and she actually used to do a lot of study on clinical teams, so hospital clinical teams or research teams, and she'd look at the number of mistakes that the different teams made. So she found that the teams with the higher number of good outcomes actually made more mistakes than the team with the fewer good outcomes. And then she thought, oh, that's strange. Okay, so did some further research. And the former, so the ones with the higher number of good outcomes who made the more mistakes, were actually, it wasn't that they were making more mistakes, they were admitting to them. So they had a culture, they had that safety within their team that they were able to admit to their mistakes, not hide from them, and actually the whole team could learn from them, which then meant they got more positive outcomes because they could learn from those mistakes. So from this, she formulated the concept of psychological safety, the belief that we will not be punished or humiliated for speaking up with ideas, questions, concerns, or mistakes. It's a shared belief. So we go back to culture and belief held by members of the team that the team is safe for interpersonal risk taking. So interpersonal, we're talking about relationships and communications between each other. So thinking about that example we just had about communications, it's that latter, knowing that actually I have an idea, I can share it with you, knowing that I'm not going to be humiliated or punished or made to feel that it's not worthy, but actually we'll take it forward with the group and we'll discuss it. So that's kind of how that sits with psychological safety and communications. Much like when I talked at the beginning about the benefits of individuals thriving, the benefits of psychological safety are really similar. So happier teams who take more considered risks, they raise concerns sooner, which prevent costs for a business. And also for if you're in a health and safety area, it's a really good safety element. They are raising the concerns as soon as they think of them. They stay on the team longer because they're happier. So you've got that retention of staff as well. And they're more resilient to change and external changes. And when I say resilient, I'm a change manager. So when I say resilient to change, I don't mean they block. I don't mean resistance to change. I mean, they are easier. Yeah, they are able to adapt to change and take on board because they've got that supportive team around them. One example, I was thinking of a few examples to sort of help people understand what we mean by this. I'm going to use Chernobyl. So the 1986 nuclear power plant disaster. I'm not going to explain it all, but I'm just going to say that one of the human factors that was at play in that disaster was the culture of not questioning or speaking up. It was a psychologically unsafe team. However, feel free to Google Chernobyl or look at other disasters through history. You'll be surprised of how much a lack of psychological safety has played a part, and it is usually not being able to speak up and raise concerns early. Mm-hmm. So I always find that, you know, one night when you can't sleep, pop onto Google and have a look, see what comes up. So from this, we've talked a little bit about psychological safety and what culture is and actually what leaders can do. And I thought it'd be really nice to sort of maybe for me to give a few practical tips about what can the leader do to promote psychological safety. So practically, what can people take away and say, ah, I can go and do this tomorrow with my team? And like I said right at the beginning, test and adjust, do something, see if it works, communicate with your team and ask them, is this working for you? And start to build up that trust. So
can first, I ask you something before that? Because also we get like a common understanding that from your perspective, it's leadership and how it's connected to culture as well, what mm-hmm. we understand by culture. So I think that the third piece is still missing, and we need to get to that understanding of what is high performance teams previous to move to the other side. It's, so if you want to talk about that first, that would be great.
Yep, I can. Let's have a think. So high performing teams are a little bit like leadership. The high performance will depend on what the team objectives are. So a high performing team for myself mm-hmm. is a team that's balanced. And when I say balance, I mean the team is thriving on their business objectives. So they are doing well, high performing for the organization they're working for, but they're also high performing on their team dynamics. So they are, for example, working well as a team. They are cohesive. They have that psychological safety within the team. They're able to brainstorm with each other, collaborate, try out ideas, make mistakes, and actually start learning from each other, and also breaking down silos within teams. I've worked with a couple of companies which have different, in a research company, where they have different teams mm-hmm. across the company, but very siloed in their approaches. They don't speak to each other. But what you'll find is team A over here on the right are doing something similar to team B, but they're just not speaking. Mm-hmm. So they're doing the same thing and it's wasted effort. And actually, if they combined and they communicated, then they could actually innovate and create more. So that high performance comes out when they're doing, when they're talking. And also the third elements, we've got the business objectives, the team cohesion. And the third one for me, and I find this one really important, is the individuals are high performing. And when I say high performing, I don't mean the normal high performance of hitting their objectives, getting their bonuses, you know, getting A's on all their reports. I mean high performing life, as in they have balance. They have good nutrition. They're getting exercise. Mm. They are having time outside of work for their hobbies, spending time with families. Because I think a rounded individual is high performing when they are able to balance all of it. And I'm not saying it's easy, because it's definitely not easy. But I think that's where leaders come in to really get to know their teams and get to know each individual member of their team and think, well, actually, that balance for that one individual may be different for the balance for someone else. And it's really understanding that it being inclusive of everyone and saying, okay, you've all got the same opportunities, but where's your balance? It might be that someone has 4 children, husband, 3 dogs, and actually they want to finish at 5, and time outside of work is really, really important to them because they're juggling so much at home. You may have someone who at home, has loads of time, works from home, and actually likes to flex their day a little bit more. So they work early in the morning, they might work till 7-8 at night because they want to and they can, but actually going to for a run at lunchtime might be really important for their own mental and physical well-being. So understanding actually for their high performance, for them to be high performing individual, that time allocated to running at lunchtime makes them that high performance balance. So hopefully that's answered the question a bit, what high performance means to me. I mean, you can Google high performance, it will come up with loads of different things. But for me, it's that real balance between those three elements.
Great. That's the important thing we are doing here. So from your perspective, from your experience. So thank you so much, Zoe.
It's okay. Yes. So I think, so that second one, I'll go into a little bit more with the psychological safety element, because that second one that I talked about for high performance, the teams, mm-hmm. So how are the teams working together? How are they becoming high performing teams? And for me, that's really about that psychological safety, the leader creating that environment where they're able to be cohesive as a team. There was a study, Google did a study, I say a number of years ago, but it went on for a number of years as well, called Project Aristotle. It was years and years of research, and it was undertaken by Google with one single goal, and that was to define what makes a team at Google effective, which was a high-performing team. They were looking for effective high-performing teams, what makes it. They studied all sorts of teams, between 3 and 50 people across the organization, across the globe, all levels of seniority. And what they found is that a team's effectiveness isn't tied to individual IQ or a team size, but it's how the team works together, which really links into that. Actually, how does the team cohesion work for them to be able to bounce ideas off each other and create that high performance? So they found 5 behaviors of an effective team. And I'm going to say these in order. So psychological safety, which we'll talk about a bit more, came at the top. So that was it most important. Dependability, structure and clarity, meaning, and impact. As a side note, meaning is an interesting one to me because there's a lot of work. Dan Pink has done a lot of work on motivation theory. And one of his motivation theory, he calls it the motivation 3.0, and purpose, mastery, and autonomy. So purpose, people having purpose to their lives and their work. Mm-hmm. And it links with the meaning that Project Aristotle found in high performing teams. So there's quite a lot of link between that theory as well. But because we're talking about psychological safety in the team, I'll focus on that one. And we've looked a little bit about comms, so that'd be one. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to split this into general and then what leaders can do specifically. So general things that are really important for a high performing team, and then actually what people can take away as hints and tips. So feedback is a huge one. I do quite a lot of consulting with big companies, and time again people say to me, we give feedback but we're not great at having hard conversations. And I go, oh, okay, so what if the feedback you have to give is for development points? And they kind of say, well, we kind of do it, but they do it in a really, you know, and feedback doesn't have to be nasty, but they struggle to find the way to give those what people would see as negative feedback in a way that people can actually take it on board and learn from it. So and it kind of goes back to our first scenario with the communication from the colleague on the Monday morning. The initial feedback you give will affect how someone feels. And what we need to be thinking with feedback is, you know, do we create a culture of asking for feedback? So a pull system where we're actually saying to people, listen, can you give me some feedback, please? Or do we have a push system where we are given feedback? So Zoe, you finished this project, I'm giving you feedback. Or is it a bit of both? There's no right or wrong, but what works in your organization? And if you are going to put in a system where people ask for feedback, then there has to be accountability on people saying, yes, I will give that feedback. I've seen quite a number of times where people have asked for feedback and someone's too busy to give it. But that culture of helping each other to learn needs to be embedded so that people are happy to give feedback. Who do we ask for feedback from? Do we shy away from asking certain people? So do we think, well, I've impressed this person, so I'm going to go and ask them for feedback, I'll get good feedback? Or do we have a bit of courage and say, well, I'm going to ask my whole team and I'm going to see what every single person thinks of me or thinks of what I've done with them? A lot of the sort of 360 feedback tools you can have, you can self-select individuals. So do we get a good representation or do we just select the people we want to hear from? Because we know, because quite often, as you know, feedback goes into your performance management, which goes into your bonus, your pay rises. So it's a bit of a thread throughout that, what does feedback actually feed into? And the last one I'll talk a little bit about is how to give feedback. And this is very much a practical tip. So I was in the military for 16 years and I was an instructor for a number of years. I was a leadership instructor and I was also in specialist training instruction. And feel free to laugh because every time I say it, I have a giggle because I'm not sure what the actual name is. But we have a technique we used to call the bathtub technique. I think it's also called the sandwich technique, but we call it the bathtub. And when I say bathtub, think of a roll top bath. So one that goes like this, goes down and then goes up. Okay, so it's a way to give feedback, and what I'll do to explain it, I'll just explain the stages of this sort of bathtub. So after an event, so you might have had a training event or a project or something, we ask the person we're giving feedback to, how do you feel it went? And the silences are really important, because when someone comes out and they've had a bad day, they just need that time to think. And sometimes they want you to tell them, but it's really important. How do you feel that went? And I always say, how do you feel it went? Not how do you think it went? Because with feeling, you're connecting to emotions and not just thinking. So how do you feel? And then they tell you, and you'll find they'll usually tell you for about 10 minutes of everything that went wrong. They'll just tell you all of it. Okay, right. So the question is we ask next is, okay, I've heard you. So what went well? And this is really important. This is a really important one, because if someone has had a bad session, a bad training session, all they are thinking about is what they did wrong. They could have done two things wrong in the whole session, but if they'd done it, have done it at the end, it will be fresh in their mind. So we take them back and we say, well, what did you do well? And the only answer that I won't accept is nothing. And I have had people say to me, I did nothing. And I went, okay. So I give them a bit of time. And if they really can't think of anything, I will seed them. I will give them a couple of things and say, well, what about this? Talk to me how you did that. And they'll go, oh, actually, I did that. I was okay at that. So, yes, yes, you were. So we talk about what they did well. And then we get them into a bit more of a positive frame of mind. And then we say, okay, if you did this again, what could you improve on? And we ask them to pick two or three areas. Don't leave it as an open question, because you'll get 10 or 12 areas. Just ask them to focus on two or three areas. What would you do? And then as you come up the bathtub, so that's right at the bottom of the bathtub, they're talking about those development areas. As you come up, how can you use those strengths that we've already spoken about to help you improve? So the things that you do well, how can you use those strengths to help you improve? And they go, oh, okay, yeah, I could do this and do that. And then you reaffirm to them what went well. You go, yeah, you can use that because you did it really well. This is what you did. And then as you get to the top of that bathtub, you ask them, okay, so what are the one or two actions you're going to take away from this to put into play for next time? So you're giving them actually actions to take away to work on from next time. So hence the bathtub. And it's really to get them into that positive mind. I use it all the time. I use it in coaching. I use it with my clients. It's a really nice way of softening feedback and really getting that reflection piece and getting the, because you're always going to learn better if you say it in your own words. So that's a little bit about feedback. Another general one I was thinking about is conflict within the group. So this seems to be quite a big one. And this comes with very much about how do I give feedback? How do I have hard conversations? So this seems to be what most leaders dread the most. They seem to dread conflict. And I always say, well, actually, conflict can be positive. And they look at me like I've grown a second head and like, really, Zoe? Why? And I said, well, it depends how it's dealt with. It really depends on how you deal with that. If you have a cognitively diverse team, so people with different perspectives, different ways of thinking of things, and they bring in those different opinions and those different perspectives, there will be conflict. There'll be a meeting of minds in the middle, and it will go boom, and they will talk. But that's where the magic happens. That's where all the ideas come out, the discussions, the joining of ideas, leading to innovation, understanding. There's a really good model, actually, if anyone wants to look it up. It's the Tuckman's model of team development. And Tuckman talks about there are actually five. But I'm going to talk about four stages of team development. The first one is forming. The second one is storming, then norming, and then performing. So even he says that storming bit is a second piece. So you form, you get to know each other. And then when you know each other a bit better and you know how much you can talk, that storming piece is needed for you to then get to that normalization of, I understand what people are coming from, different perspectives, and then you can start performing. So it really helps the team to have that storming. as a leader, when you see this happening in your team, there are things you can do to help. Of course, there are. My main thing would be to address the elephant in the room. So actually speak about it and say, you know, this is expected. I've brought in a diverse group of people. You've all got amazing brains. You're going to bring so much to the team. Talk, you know, discuss, have difference of opinions. You don't all have to think the same. So really sort of say to them, I know this is happening and this is okay. It's okay to feel uncomfortable. And I would say, yeah, become comfortable with that feeling of being uncomfortable just for a little bit. Embrace it, be open to new ideas, explain to your team about active listening and how you really listen to each other and take those ideas forward. Sometimes it's quite nice to have a whiteboard and have some pens and actually brainstorm ideas so people can actually see, those who are visual can actually see the connections on a screen. You can also pair people up. So you can actually, if you're in real life or on Zoom, you can pair people up to discuss new ideas and get them to come back as a two to present to the group. Just makes it a little bit more comfortable if you have some people who are slightly shyer or more nervous or not quite sure, you know, getting used to the group. And you know, allow them to storm. I call it respectful conflict. So be respectful for each other, but allow it to happen, because that's really how it's going to get to that sort of normalizing, and then performing stage. So we've got those. We've got we talked a little bit about feedback and then conflict with the group. Before I go on to what a leader can do specifically, there's a third one that's very general, but I think it's probably the most important of the lot. And that is awareness of yourself and awareness of others. There are loads of tools you can use for this. I personally use Lumina Spark. It's a psychometric. It's my favorite. I'm always happy to have a separate conversation another time about it, but it's incredible. It's an awareness tool. It's it looks at personality preferences and how you like to be every day. You're underlying your every day, mm-hmm. and then when you're overextended, so when you're in a period of stretch or stress, how do I show up to others? So by doing that, you get a real understanding, and it's survey based, so it's really easy to do and to debrief. But that gives you really a good understanding of who am I, what do I have. What you can also do is have a team one. So you put all the team stuff in and you can see what other people are like and actually have conversations about inclusion and have a bit of an awareness of the team. Awareness of values. So motivations and values are quite important in this. Understand where you are coming from. So what is important to you? What are your values? What are your non-negotiables? You can do it as a team as well. You can understand what the team values are. It's sometimes a really nice exercise to do as a team when a team has just joined together. Who do we want to be as this team entity? Brainstorm together. There may be some crossovers that actually a couple of you have very similar values and you want to do some work together or bring that in. And really have those conversations and make them personal. You know, how was your weekend? How are you doing? Because when someone comes in on a Monday morning and they don't seem quite right, you have an understanding of what's going on at home or was something happening this weekend, and you can really get that awareness of them. And reflection, a lot of reflection. People do reflection in different ways. I've got a friend of mine who swims laps just up and down and up and down because that rhythm of the swim, I know, that rhythm of the swimming puts her into that reflective state and she can think. For me personally, I have a dog who usually comes and sits with me. He's in the living room today. But I go out in the morning, I walk in nature with my dog, and I do a lot of my thinking. I listen to the birds and just have a quiet mind time. That's what I call quiet mind time before I start my day. Mm-hmm. So they would be my very general elements. What can a leader do? I've got five or six, and I'll sort of go through them and I won't expand on them too much, but role model behaviors. So leaders can definitely role model these behaviors, including vulnerability. It's always a hard one as well. Showing people that it's okay to not know, to say, ah, that's good, but I don't know yet. Let me go and find out. Avoid blame. So in a psychologically safe environment to create high performing teams, use mistakes as learning opportunities. which leads me on to another point of growth mindset. Shift a mindset to that growth, always open to new experiences and willing to learn from your own mistakes, from others' mistakes, and things that you've talked about. Behavioral assessments, I've talked about my love, Lumina Spark. There are loads of high performing companies that use behavioral assessments to get that deeper insight. And I always say to people, it won't tell you everything, but it's a really good starting point. It's the conversation starter. Include teams in decision making. They're your team. You know, they're going to be doing the work with you. So include them in decision making. Be open to feedback, receive it well. We've talked about feedback. Always thank people for sharing their opinions and ideas. It's really easy when you're on a deadline and you're really busy to forget to say to someone, actually, thanks for that. That's been a really good starting point, or, you know, really like the perspective you brought in. Ask questions. As a leader, your questions should be around, what can I do to help? Or things like, I trust your decision. What, if anything, do you need from me to support you? And also, what do you think will work? Especially if you're dealing with a team of subject matter experts, so people who are deep specialists, what do you need from me? What do you think? Well, how can I help you? It all goes back to that servant leadership that I spoke about briefly, you know, there to help your team. And probably my last point would be champion your team, because you work as a cohort, you work as a cohesive team. The leader and the team should be one working towards goals. So really champion your team and make sure they understand that you are there to support them and make sure they can thrive. So they would be my top tips for leaders creating that high performing team and that culture of high performance, definitely.
I must say that has been amazing. And my thought process goes from building those kind of relationships, and it took me actually to Shane about level 3 relationships. And actually, how do you prefer to build those kind of relationships, if we are talking about in personal and professional life, that they are combined together? Mm-hmm. And then how we tackle that with the different leaderships, that it depends on each situation and the kind of relationship that you build. And then comes a little of coaching and agile when you talk about feedback and how do you communicate with the team as well. And finally, it goes to the same thing. We're talking about people here. So how do you maximize the value of that people that will have an impact within the team, within the project, and within the business? So that's kind of my thought process around this topic. And at the same time, I was thinking about when you talk about conflict, and the conflict is a good thing to happen, particularly when we are talking, conflicts happens even within the same culture, the same background culture. Imagine in a scenario that we are working with different people around the world. So that's the magic too that you were talking about.
Yeah.
To have those kind of uncomfortable situations of uncomfortable silence as well, in order to have that understanding and to know and to get to know the other people, how they think, how they react, if this a common standard, of this is a particular situation, and so on. So thank you so much for this. I my mind is going that way right now.
So that's and that's the thing, Laura, it all interlinks. I think it's such, I'm very, I'm going to regret saying this. I'm very people obsessed. So I'm obsessed with finding out how leaders and teams work together. And the more research I do, the more clients I work with, the more environments and different contexts I see, it's that real realization that everything is connected. At the end of the day, we're all human beings. We all have, you know, very similar things that we, you know, that talk back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. We all want comfort and safety and food and shelter. And it's amazing to think about how different environments, upbringings, everything can bring all those really diverse perspectives in. So for a leader, it is just connecting all the dots and making sure that actually everyone is able to thrive. And I think inclusion is so important. I often say to people, diversity is pointless unless you have inclusion. So you can recruit for diversity, but unless you find out a way to include everyone, and it may not be that you include them in the same way because everyone's needs are different, but unless you include and find that inclusion, then diversity won't work on its own.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but no, I really, really enjoyed chatting with you today.
Yes. I mean, from my point of view, yes. I'm sorry, Lakshmi.
Yeah, sorry. So I'm curious, Zoe, don't mind me asking, but, you know, at least in US, right, whatever happens in the military, they go ahead and bring it to the corporate world. You know, it could be that team of teams concepts. It could be a lot many things. Mm-hmm. And you have spent solid 16 years, right? Yeah. I mean, it's solid. That's all I can say. You know, I just can't say anything further. You know, no word is coming from me. But then how have you seen, you know, 16 years in the military? And then you mentioned command thing, you know, the communication and all that. Now you have transitioned into a consulting world, right? So any other learnings that you bring to the table, stories about, you know, the good aspects of the military thing you share? I mean, the transition and how it has been for you as a professional individual.
Yes. So I'm actually just looking at my other screen because I'm just bringing something up, which actually will help me answer this question. So I opened my own consultancy, Glass Ripple Consulting, and on my website, I have an insights part, and I've created a blog. So I created a 4-chapter blog, chapters 1 to 4, on my journey through life so far, really, a little bit about my childhood and how I've learned my own values and motivations, how those have changed through the years. And there's a particular chapter on my blog, I think it's chapter 3 or 4, I talk about actually what have I learned from the military and brought back into what brought out with me into the civilian world. And there are, let's say there are loads of things. My values that I realized were very much authenticity. So being myself, being genuine and being true in my words and actions. And then I also thought about curiosity. Curiosity is a big value of mine. So I always have a strong desire to learn. And I think some of that comes from my time in the military. I was constantly changing jobs every 2 years, learning, going into new teams, really trying to understand and learn very quickly. So I've always got that curiosity. Compassion is another thing. In the military, we like I said, we change jobs every 2 years. We go out of area to some very faraway places, to very different cultures, and we very quickly have to learn how to thrive in a different place and a different culture. So I'm always compassionate to, when I was looking after teams in that environment, I was always compassionate to actually, how do they feel? Sometimes the first time away from home, and they are, you know, middle of nowhere. and it's very, very different. Optimism was another one. I was quite ill a couple of years ago. And from that, I really started to think, I have a choice here on how I want to view the world. And I choose to be optimistic. I have bad days, as does everyone else, but I choose to really see the best in situations. From the military to the civilian world, the skills, so they were my values that I sort of brought with me, but my skills, I'm looking to my left because I said strong communication skills, because we change jobs so often, all stems from that. The ability to build trust, because quite often we have to work in teams. And I think especially for consultancy, building trust quickly has become as something I've lent on and building rapport. The strength to be courageous. So as a consultant, as you know, quite often people may not want to hear what you think, but have that courage. That is what you're being paid for, to come in and add value. So be courageous and actually saying what you think. I talked about compassion before. And actually just being open to change, knowing that being adaptable and knowing that actually things in the consulting world change from usually day to day or week to week at least, and having that adaptability to not think it's the end of the world and actually adapt to new things. And yeah, just going with the flow a little bit because of the change. So I think that's definitely, I'll tell you what though, Lakshmi, one thing I have noticed is definitely that isn't the same is the hierarchy. Because we have a really strict hierarchy in the military. And I think sometimes, and like I said, my opinion, it can really block communications, and it can sometimes put a lot of processes and like what we call red tape. So it can stop a lot of things happening because you have to go up the hierarchy. I find in consulting, it's a lot flatter, and it means you can get things done a lot quicker. So I've definitely, it's something I don't miss. Let's say that.
Yeah. Very bad. And I think, you know, not only just me, but I think even for the audience, you know, if people are really curious, the one that you bring to the table, it's like they should be able to go and check out that 3 and 4 chapters that you mentioned and learn more about, you know.
I popped in my chapter and I do a lot of work. I do a lot of articles on growth mindset and psychological safety. I've just put one up about toxic leadership because personally, it's a bit of a trigger for me, toxic leadership. I've unfortunately had, I've been on the end of toxic leadership, but that doesn't mean we don't talk about it. You know, we can talk about hard things. We need to talk about hard things because we have to understand the implications they have on people and teams. And actually, the knock-on effects to businesses as well. So, there are so many topics I try and go over on my blogs and on my LinkedIn posts just to try and spread a bit of knowledge and get some discussion going to get that diversity of thought. So, yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you so, so very much. So it was amazing. Yeah.
Thoroughly enjoyed.
Actually, I was planning to ask the same question and let me just ask that. So that's our minds are connected. So so if you kind of summarize this in one sentence, what are your feelings regarding our talking, what you have shared with this episode and with the audience? That will be great to know as well.
So a summary of everything we spoke about. Wow. might be more than one sentence, Laura. I think leadership is a privilege. I think to be in a leadership position, it is a privilege. I think leaders are those architects of culture and also architects of change and have a lot of influence. I think as a leader, it's important to be authentic. So no matter what type of leadership or what style of leadership you have, it's authentic to you. So it links with your values and links with who you are. So if you are a compassionate, empathetic person, your style will probably be very compassionate leadership. And you probably will have a very coaching style, trying to bring, you know, the best out of people, just as one example. So I expect it to be authentic. I think as a leader, we can do a lot through communications and actually talking to our teams. Because through communications, we can get awareness of ourselves, we can get 360 awareness of others, and get a real deep understanding. First of all, on a personal level, so you understand what people are going through and understand how to include them. But also on a business level, understanding what people's specialist interests are, even if they're not specialists in it, what do they love doing? What are they going to do the discretionary effort in? Actually, if you give them a project in this area, they're going to thrive because they love it. And then you just put them with a mentor or a buddy so to help them along so that we can help people thrive that way as well. So like I said, I think it's a privilege. I think being a leader of teams is a real responsibility, but the communication, the creating that psychologically safe space where people feel they can make mistakes and talk about them and learn from them for the benefit of the team is a really, really good place to go with leadership. It's all about people. That's what, yes. Always about people. All connects.
Well, thank you so much, Sui, for this. For your experience for this conversation. It has been great. We appreciate a lot. And I want to ask the final question I ask to every speaker. So where people can reach you, where they can find you?
Okay, so I was just going to pop it in the chat, but I realize you won't be able to do it on that. That's how I used to, I've got to hybrid working. So my website is www.glassrippleconsulting. Or they can find me, Zoe Poulton, on LinkedIn. So I do all my posts on LinkedIn, be reached on LinkedIn. If they want to email me, then it's just zoe@glassrippleconsulting.com. Great. So yeah, please feel free, if anyone wants to reach out, have a chat about anything people-based, shall we say, whether that's change management or HR or leadership or teaching and how to, you know, bring people on board. I'm always very happy to have a conversation.
Great. We will add it to the episode description too. So thank you. Brilliant. So much, Zoe.
Have a
lovely afternoon. Lashmi, you too. I believe you're evening right now.
Yeah.
So yeah. It was a pleasure, ladies.
Laura.
And thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you. And enjoy your travels, Laura. Good, safe thank journey you. Home.
Thank you, Zoe.
Thank
you.
Thank
you so
very
take much.
Care.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Thanks to everyone who makes these podcasts possible. In particular, thanks to the guest speakers and to you who are on the other side listening. If you liked it and were able to learn something new today, we invite you to share it with your entire network. We also invite you to subscribe to our different channels to follow our latest news. If you are interested in being part of these series, you can apply by clicking on the link that is in the general presentation of the podcast. Until next time.
Thank you to the boys, Kashish Wadbani,